Johannes Kaufmann, the German tenor, is one of the biggest names in opera today. He has got an extraordinary voice, and you will know it, I hope, from recordings, but now we have the opportunity to hear it in the flesh because he's making his first visit to Australia, and I'm going to be talking to him in a moment. He is what they call a spinto tenor. We'll ask him about that. One of the things that spinto tenors do is sing the role of Don José in Bizet's Carmen. That's the voice of Johannes Kaufmann as Don José in Bizet's Carmen, the flower song. And I'm delighted to welcome Johannes Kaufmann to the Music Show studio. Thank you very much for coming.
Hi, hello.
It's nice to meet you. Can we do some definitions? What is a spinto tenor? Because that's what Don José generally is called.
Oh, God. I'm not a big fan of all these categories and all these boxes that people try to squeeze voices in. There used to be a system for that, but for a particular reason to protect singers from, let's say, from the from the theater, so that they wouldn't have to do literally everything. So I mean, I remember when I was in my first years and my first contracts, of course, I literally did everything where it said tenor. And I think that's not a good idea, especially when you're young and unexperienced and you don't know exactly where your voice is going. But basically, these categories, I mean, of course, you have the lyric tenor, that is, you have the light lyric tenor, then you have the lyric tenor, then you have the so-called lirico spinto, that is the lyrical tenor with the possibility to give a little bit more sound where necessary. Then you have the spinto tenor, when you are capable and not only doing it two or three times throughout an evening, but do it actually all the time. And then you have the Helden tenor, which means pretty much loud, loud, loud all the time.
This is Siegfried.
And this is, yeah, but this is, let's say, something like an old idea of what people think of about opera. And I think the much more convincing and modern way to see it is that you need to train your voice and your technique to be able to do it all. Mm. Of course, and there are voices that cannot do the very strong things. But I never accept people who say, I have a big voice, that means I can't sing piano. Mm. Then there is something wrong, honestly. And even in the big, you just mentioned Siegfried, and I recorded an excerpt of Siegfried on my Wagner album, where you can see that also Wagner and also Siegfried can be a very lyric character sometimes. And I think it would be really also annoying, not only not satisfyingly convincing, if you would just only sing loud or only sing soft.
Yes.
Every forte can only be noticed as a great forte when there was a piano before.
Wagner was adamant that he wanted his roles played by actors, you know, who could sing, of course, but I mean, that he stressed the acting. In the Ring Cycle in particular, and it's something that you, I think, have made an important part of your career. I mean that unlike perhaps the stereotypical idea of the opera singer, you have taken the acting very seriously from the beginning. Can we talk about how you do that? I mean, how much acting do you do with your voice, for example? I mean, does your Florestan sound different from your Tamino?
Well, the question is, how would you define acting? If acting is something artificial, something pretending to be that you are not, I hope I'm not an actor. You see, for me, acting means being truthful, being realistically really into this character, being this person, convincing not only the audience but also yourself that you are actually in this situation and these are your feelings and your words. And once you've reached that, there's no acting involved anymore. It's just reality. And everybody will believe you only because you believe it. And then you don't have to add anything. No gestures, no special theatrical tricks to bring it across. It's just there. And so therefore, I think, yes, of course, a Tamino or whatever is different from a Florestan because the situation is different. Florestan is desperate. He's facing death. He doesn't know that there is somebody literally around the corner, some levels above, that is about to save him. So he has finished up with his life. And therefore, this aria is hallucinating very much depressive. And that's how it should sound. And I think you cannot pretend to do that. You just have to understand how it must feel to have lost every hope, everything, and then see somebody have an illusion and see an angel. I hope not everybody has had experiences that are really, really one-to-one equivalent to that, but you just have to dig deep in your memory, and there are certainly situations that maybe are going into a similar direction. That's where the source of the emotions lie, that you need to find and recreate. It sounds strange at the beginning, and it is very difficult to achieve in the first years, especially when you are a singer that has to take care of your instrument as well. When you're an actor and you lose your voice on stage, it doesn't matter because, I mean, it's still very realistic than somebody that freaks out is literally losing his voice. That's totally fine. Whereas a singer, you just can't afford that. I mean, because there's still some music to come and you have to compete, let's say, in a positive way with the orchestra. So you have to produce enough sound to come across. But once you've reached a point where you don't worry about music, you don't worry about singing, about the voice, only because it has been automized so much that it's as natural as talking, then you can concentrate on the story, then you can concentrate on the feelings. And then it's very simple because you learn that as if you push a button. You know exactly how to create within seconds fear inside, or joy, or anger, or whatever.
How much of that is done for you, Jonas Kaufmann, by Beethoven in the case of Florestan? I mean, when you are singing that role, do you feel in his notes characterization?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you see, when you have an aria like or an opening for Florestan, Florestan doesn't appear in the first half, and in the second half, it you just visit him down in
the
prison,
dungeon.
And it's just the introduction music to this aria is so intense that, of course, as soon as you just listen to these 3.5 minutes music, you're right there. There's no need to add anything. There's no need to create some other images in your head other than thinking about the situation and listening to that music, and here we are. But that's not always the case. I mean, of course, there are sometimes situations where there's no preparation at all, musical preparation. But music in general, also the accompaniment during an aria, during a scene, helps a lot. There are composers that, I don't want to say leave you alone, but leave it up to you to charge the music with that energy. And there are other composers that just give like 99% and you just have to add a little bit to make it perfect. The Verismo composers were very much keen on charging music with emotions in an enormous way. And there are others, like when you perform songs from Schubert, for instance. Schubert is someone that really does a lot with little. I mean, it's just some notes, and it's not very spectacular, but still it can be extremely intense, but you just have to take it in your hands. Also, Verdi is a composer where you have to do quite a lot to make it happen. Mm.
Coming back to Schubert, because I'd like us to listen to the Lyre Man from the end, last song of Winterreise. How much acting do you do as a leader singer? And that song cycle is a kind of great big mad scene in a way. I mean, but you can go over the top, can't you?
No, I mean, the whole thing is about, it's a huge depression. I mean, it's just incredible. But you have to be very tasteful with it. I mean, it's just, when you talk about acting, it would be already too much. I mean, to me, acting sounds like also physical. And I think that would be totally wrong if you would use your arms or your gestures to just underline what you're just doing. Because I think what happens is the opposite, that people stop believing you. It has to come from within. It has to come with the words. And the less you do, the more honest you are, the better it is, I think, because that's what it is. I mean, someone who is really depressed and is longing for death wouldn't make it obvious to the world out there. It is just a discussion with your alter ego, with yourself, and that can be very intimate.
Well, let's listen to Der Leiermann, the Hurdy-Gurdy Man, the last song from Winterreise by Schubert, sung by Jonas Kaufmann and Helmut Deutsch at the piano.
Tritt und seine Leier steht ihm nimmer still.
Helmut Deutsch was playing the piano, and Jonas Kaufmann was singing the final song from Schubert's song cycle Winterreise, Winter's Journey. And Jonas Kaufmann is my guest on today's music show. Let's perhaps talk about I particularly wanted to ask you about Claudio Abbado, because you worked with him very closely, and of course he died recently. And I wondered whether you could talk about what you got from him, about what it was like working with such an experienced conductor who'd worked with so many other singers, and a conductor who, for whom opera was really in his blood.
Absolutely. I mean, unfortunately, I didn't have enough time to work as much as I would have loved to work with him. I had to turn many of his offers down, only because Claudio was someone, and I think I admired that, he was pretty spontaneous. I mean, he wouldn't think longer than for next season, and especially because he knew about his circumstances. And that was the, let's say, there are others out there who never think about leaving this world ever. So they are 80 something and they're still having a 10 years plan ahead. So I think he was very realistic in this way, which made it for me very complicated, because unfortunately operas are scheduled 5 years ahead, which is insane, but we can't help that. That's the way it is. I think, again, I mean, it's the experiences that he had in his life have changed the way he performed, and he saw music. And when you're young, you try to impress people. You try to do everything very expressive and almost provocatively placative, obvious, whatever. And with Claudio, that was certainly not the case. I mean, he was just very minimalistic. But out of that came an enormous power. When I think back of the occasions that we worked together, it was just fantastic, because he would never stick to his ideas, even though he was extremely experienced and wise and famous, world famous, of course. But still, he would listen to others and say, yeah, you know, maybe that's not a bad idea. Let's try this and let's try that. And for me, also, one of the major points was when he was working with the orchestras. You see, you have conductors that explain everything. And I said, okay, so on the second violins, no, only the second part of the second violins. And you see this note, and don't you see there? And blah, blah. So they explain everything, which is great, because it makes it maybe easier for a musician to lean back and say, okay, so if I'm doing something wrong, he's going to tell me. Mm. With Claudio, he would just stop and look at everybody, very astonished, and say, I think we do it again, right? And he would do that same thing maybe two or three times, and everybody would get nervous and think, oh, it's probably me. What did I do wrong? So the whole orchestra ended up sitting on the edge of the chair, really, really listening to each other and make music instead of just feeling secure and not listen. So that was absolutely fascinating, I have to say, to see an orchestra, really, even an orchestra like the Berlin Phil, just try to understand what's going on here. And I really loved his way. He was always nice. He was always modest. And he was always calm. And at the same time, the music result was an eruption.
And he was very spontaneous towards the end of his life when it came to sort of deciding what he was going to do.
Yes.
Was he spontaneous on the podium?
Oh, yeah, also. I mean, it was always, performance was the thing that counted. It was always like, do we really need to rehearse that? I mean, when we could easily do it in the show. Rehearsals were not, you see, unfortunately, you have sometimes conductors that use rehearsals to show off, to just explain how much more experienced you are and how much wisdom you have collected in all the years. And which is sometimes not bad also. There are also conductors that are afraid of telling the orchestra some maybe for them obvious things that the orchestra doesn't know. And then they would love to actually know something. And I remember when we recorded this, the arias with him and the Mahler Orchestra, the German repertory, I had the feeling at some point that the orchestra really doesn't know what they should aim for. So I said, Claudio, can I tell just briefly about what this opera is about and what the situation is and what then ultimately all the little things in the orchestra has to image. I mean, what is the mirror of... and he said, well, if it helps, if you want to. And I was a little bit afraid, because I had the experience that sometimes orchestras just don't want to know that. They just want to do their job, and it's only the 3 hours, and we have to break soon, so hurry up. And I did, and they were listening, and I said, okay, let's try. And it sounded completely different in my impression. But so I we continued, and then the next day we had another aria, and we did a run through, and then we wanted to record it, and then the concertmaster said, wait, we forgot something. What? You haven't told us. I mean, we need to know the story. And it was so great to see an orchestra really, really being interested.
Yes.
And feeling that there is a difference between just making music or making music for a certain purpose or intention. And he let me do it. So I admire that too, because not many like to get the lead out of their hands.
Johannes Kaufmann, it's been very good to meet you. Thank you very much for coming on today's show. I know there are some very excited people in Sydney and Melbourne waiting to hear you sing, and I will give those dates in a moment. But first of all, let's hear your Floristan with Claudio Albardo conducting. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much.
Ein Engel sich tröstend zur Seite gestellt. Ein Engel Leonoren, Leonoren, der Gattin sogleich,
And that's the voice of Johannes Kaufmann as Floristan in Fidelio by Beethoven, the Mahler Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Claudio Albardo. And Johannes Kaufmann is singing tomorrow and next Sunday at the Concert Hall of the Sydney Opera House with the Australian Opera and Ballet Orchestra, conducted by Jochen Rieder. And he's singing at Hamer Hall at the Arts Centre in Melbourne on Thursday with Orchestra Victoria, conducted by Jochen Rieder. You're listening to The Music Show on RN Radio Australia and online.